Hello, everybody, and thank you for tuning in to the Liberty Report. With me today is Daniel McAdams, our co-host. And Daniel, I understand you have a little announcement today.
We do. We do indeed. We've put our tickets on sale for our very exciting September 9th conference this year. You remember very well that we did one last year. It's in Washington, D.C. at the Dulles Airport Marriott. We sold out last year, and I anticipate doing so this year. But tickets are up. They're available now. Easy to remember how to get there, ronpaulinstitute.org/conference. And we'll be putting up an article on our website later today telling people more about it.
Oh, very good. Our first conference like that was last year, and it was very successful. I was pleasantly surprised that it did so well, and we had a lot of good compliments from them. So I expect that'll happen again. And I know you're putting a lot of work into that. Having conferences is not the easiest thing in the world. Some places, they have just one individual doing all this work, but you're doing most of this work on this. So it'll be fun getting people together.
It will.
So today I'd like to follow up on the conversation about Mosul, because some information has come out. Patrick Coburn had an interesting article, as others have, just in the last 24 or 48 hours, in saying, you know, Mosul was pretty messy and there's still some skirmishes going on there. But there's some estimation that that it could have been 40,000 civilians killed. And, of course, the numbers will never be absolutely verified, but a lot of people died. And most of them, they think most of them died from bombs. And, drones and bombs and all kinds of missiles coming in. And that's when innocent people die. I can be quite confident that much of the weaponry, maybe on both sides, was a cost to the American taxpayer. And that, which is the real tragedy, is that we give weapons and and they end up in the enemy's hands.
Yeah.
But 40,000, that's a tremendous number. And the big question is, did we win? Of course, we, the United States, the American people, didn't win. And once we show a few pictures of Mosul right now, the people of Mosul didn't win. So there's no victor. But ironically, and we might talk about this a little bit later, ironically, it may have been the Iranians that are winning this fight in some type of a way, the way things are going in that region.
Yes, and you know, the Coburn's report was based on a Kurdish intelligence services study of the city. And according to Coburn, they've been pretty accurate in the past. So they say that as many as 40,000 could have died. And the reason for such a high number is just simply the horrific fact that when a bomb hits these buildings with lots of people inside, it just squishes them all together and they all die, you know. And it's just, in short, the Pentagon is not going to like this number. They're going to dispute it. They're saying, you know, maybe 1,000, something like this. But if you look at the pictures and you look at what we've seen, I think it's probably the numbers really are closer to what Coburn's reporting.
Yes, and that went on for a long time. We've been involved in Iraq for 14 years now, and I think this particular battle went on for 9 months.
9 months, yeah.
And when you see these pictures and you think, well, if you're a victim of all this, let's say you just want to be left alone and everybody stay out of our way. I want to go home now, but there's no home to go back to. And you can't help but understand why some of the mass migration occurs. Maybe not all. There's other reasons for migration, but I'll tell you what, they don't have any choice. And for them to go back and get their buildings back again. But there's some record to show that once the war ends, you can't have success like Aleppo.
Well, Aleppo, we just had a piece on up on the Institute's website. We got it off of Zero Hedge, an amazing report of, and of course, it was also a tragedy. A lot of people were killed in the liberation of Aleppo from Al-Qaeda. But if you look at some of the pictures now in the piece that we put up, they're swimming in the pool, they're at outdoor cafes, they're rebuilding. There's a picture of a priest walking, Christian priest walking down the street. None of this happened. They say they're celebrating their first jihad-free summer in a number of years. So there is a real contrast there.
And it's far from perfect. I have always argued if you want to solve our problems and the world's problems, just legalize freedom.
Yeah.
And put the responsibility back on the individual, and they will bring it out. They have to give up on their government. But when half or more of a population becomes dependent and like to be dependent on government, they're not going to give it up easily. But, you know, when you have a situation like they have in Aleppo and Mosul, if you can just get the killers out of the way and allow people to go back to work, all of a sudden there will be help. But, you know, there's an argument now for the statists and sympathizers, and there'll be some from this country, that we, as taxpayers, have a moral obligation, even if they say, nah, we agree, we shouldn't have done all that. But now that we did it, we really have this moral obligation to rebuild the city. And that's a tougher argument to contend with. But if you look at it, you find out that under these kind of situations or when there's still conflict going on, the money doesn't always get to the right people. So I would say give them their freedom and allow private organizations to come in and run their own programs and not to do it through a government organization or a government entity, because, you know, sometimes you run into politicians when you deal with the government, the ones who are passing out the money, the ones that are making a contract. If you say, we're going to give them $10 billion to rebuild a city, immediately you have the contractors and the corporations and the bankers and the financiers and the politicians lining up, and lo and behold, not much happens. My guess is that however it happened, but my guess about Aleppo, I bet you there was a lot of initiative, individual initiative, in that country was not totally devoid of that before. So the picture that they painted by the Syrian government was, you know, very, very distorted. And your point was that when it was returned to the government and allowed to happen, it must have been they weren't all of a sudden taking up their guns and joining the fight. We got to get rid of Assad. We got to get rid of Assad. It was exactly the opposite.
Yeah, people did return. But, you know, our old friend Peter Van Buren, who we've had on a few times on the show, he wrote, you know, the great book that we both enjoyed so much about his experience in the reconstruction of Iraq. And it's to your point, because he was saying, despite all the best intentions, all of this money spent to rebuild Iraq after the 2003 war, almost all of it was misspent, was malspent, was wasted, was thrown away. They have some crazy idea of making chicken farms for women, and nobody wanted to do it. You know, the book is really worth, We Meant Well, is the name of the book, as you remember. And so the idea is, how will the reconstruction take place? What will it look like? We've done it once. We've blown it up again. We're supposed to rebuild it again. But nobody will ask the question, what caused all this in the first place? It was going into Iraq based on lies.
You know, I want to ask one technical question because it is pretty important politically. Later, I want to get back in and talk a little bit about Iran. But Baghdadi, you know, he was supposedly killed. But right now, it looks like the confirmation hasn't been found. And so have you read anything or studied anything that indicates that we can make a pretty good guess of what's happening? For me, I suspect he may well be alive.
Yeah. And the Coburn piece points out when he's interviewing someone about this, and they said, well, there hasn't been an announcement of his successor, which would suggest that he's still around. But I know the Russians claim to kill him. The Americans have claimed to kill him probably several times over. But from this evidence, he may well still be alive somewhere.
Yeah, and I think organizations like ISIS and all, a strong, violent leader is instrumental. But then again, they've had some leaders killed before, and they replace them. And that was the point of the article, too, is that they haven't made a new appointment, which suggests that he may be still around and he hasn't been killed as has been argued. But the State Department in the last couple of days came out with a report, and we've been holding our breath for this because we wanted to find out who the real terrorists are. But the top terrorist nation is Iran. They're the ones. And the one country never mentioned is probably the country that's should be near the top of the list, and that's Saudi Arabia. Yeah. Saudi Arabia is never mentioned. So you have Iran, which is much more tolerant to Jews and Christians going on, yeah. and much less involved. We just don't read about Iranians going across the world blowing themselves up. They have not. Robert Pape mentioned that they don't have examples of Iranians. Committing suicide,
yeah.
and trying to kill people in a terrorist attack. So and they say, and then some people believe it's radical Islam. But the countries that they claim are the most radical, like Iran, they don't participate in that. They participate in worrying about their borders, and they're concerned about that, and they're instrumental. But, in the last 14 years, including this battle, I would think that when the dust settles, it may be, that the Iranians have been winning. Certainly, we're not winning. We're not winning a darn thing. And I think this whole idea that we're going to have control of the oil, even if that motivates our foreign policy, I don't think that's going to happen. Matter of fact, I think we're on the slide as far as being in charge of the world. I think we're less in charge all the time. But I think even the Iranians seem to be being a pretty good opposition to the Saudis. And I think that's the battle that's going to go on for a long time. And my suggestion, if anybody that had something to do with foreign policy asked me, which they won't, I would say, why don't we take a neutral position? Why don't we get, there's a conflict over there, and they've been fighting for a long time. Why don't we just back away? And I think we would all be better off. And maybe even that contentious situation between the two, because we egg both sides on.
Yeah.
And I think taking a step away from that would be a good idea.
Yeah, I mean, I think both the Saudis and the Israelis have enormous influence on U.S. foreign policy, and both of them are bitter enemies of Iran, so that has to a certain degree, drive our policy in the area. But this whole idea of the State Department designating Iran as the world's foremost state sponsor of terror shows how out of touch they are with reality, and also how politicized, the State Department's report has come. Their evidence of them being the number one terror country is, quote, destabilizing conflicts in Iraq and Syria. But what is Iran doing in Iraq and Syria? They're fighting ISIS. The Iranian-backed militias in Mosul were the first ones to strike a blow against ISIS. Iran is fighting ISIS and Al-Qaeda in Syria alongside Russia, their allied. If anything, they're fighting terrorism. How can you take someone fighting terrorism and say, well, that's evidence that you're the number one terrorist? I mean, anyone with half a brain would look at this and say, what are they smoking up there at the State Department?
Yeah. Well, how excited should we get about Trump's announcement? He decided that we shouldn't arm the rebels in Syria. The argument has been by many, the weapons don't end up in the hands of somebody who really cares about our foreign policy. They end up in our enemy's hand. And of course, the saying is, and the report is, that there aren't any moderates, in Syria.
Tulsi Gabbard said that when she was there.
And she went and visited there. But we're supposed to support the moderates. But just making the judgment is one thing. But the bigger picture is why are we involved there? But, he said no more weapons, to those rebels, even though there will still be, I think, interesting, what the Pentagon's doing and the CIA is doing, they're less like two different governments.
Yeah.
And this was what the CIA operation.
CIA's operation.
He said, no more CIA is going to send these weapons in, but we're still going to be sending weapons to the Kurds.
Yeah, and he's ended the CIA program. And you remember during the campaign, it was one of the decent things he says, but as you pointed out, not necessarily on principle, but he said, we don't know where these weapons are going. What are we sending these weapons in? So apparently, and this is the Washington Post, so we should take it with a grain of salt, but they're reporting based on unnamed sources that he's canceled the CIA program to arm the weapons. And there have been so many documented cases where these weapons have ended up in the hands of Al-Qaeda's Nusra Front, of ISIS, and elsewhere. So it makes sense. It's a good news story if it's true. It makes sense. But I know this will shock you, Dr. Paul, but guess how the media is spinning it. a concession to Putin. Evidence of collaboration with Putin. That's how everyone is spinning it. Nicholas Kristof had a piece yesterday, you know, the ominous Putin has really taken over.
You know, they could have a nuclear weapon drop someplace, I'm being facetious, and the announcement would be Putin and Trump just shook hands, they talked to each other. And what is really bizarre is the fact that the individuals who scream the loudest, you know, about this, about how horrible Putin and Russia is, they were bosom buddies. They were the ones that were always arguing, you know, the close association and being allies back in the old days with the Soviets.
Yeah,
when there was something to worry about, that was okay. But now, no, they don't do that. Now, I think, unfortunately, what's happening in Washington is the Republican Party in some ways doesn't exist. You have Trump, and you have independents there, and then you have the Democrats, but the allies now are, the neocon Republicans who can't stand Trump, and they're allied, at least behind the scenes, with the Democrats, who are viciously opposed to even talking to Russia, and they want more sanctions. And this whole thing, you know, and I think we may have mentioned this yesterday on the sanctions on Iran. You know, they've been ruled that they have not violated the nuclear ban treaty, you know, that has been designed. But still, we've got to put on sanctions.
Just for good measure. Well, if I can make a couple of thoughts.
Yes, go ahead.
The first I would say, and I know you probably watched these clips. I watched them a few times. But Tucker Carlson was great last week when he took down Max Boot. It was a classic piece of television that turned him into a hero in many people's eyes, mine included. But he asked him very simply, when is the last time that Iran attacked Americans at home or overseas? And, of course, bluster. He couldn't answer it because it hasn't happened. They don't attack us. So, number one, terror. The other thing, remember, get your tickets to the conference, ronpaulinstitute.org/conference. Get them while they're hot.
Very good. I want to thank everybody for tuning in today to the Liberty Report. And I think we will probably visit this subject again someday because it's not over. There are some things that have changed. Hopefully we're moving in the right direction, but nothing will settle it until we change our philosophy. It's the philosophy of foreign interventionism, which is the real culprit. And that means that people can, if they have control and power, that they can manipulate it one way or the other. So intervention doesn't tell you exactly what they intervene for or who the good guys or who the bad guys are. So they can come up with any policy whatsoever. And actually, interventionism is the furthest thing I can see from America First position. If you had an American First type foreign policy, we would just come home and take care of ourselves and have a strong national defense. We wouldn't be trying to pick and choose who should get the weapons and what we should do and pick and choose and decide who are the worst terrorists. We would not be involved in that. But that's not likely to happen. But in the meantime, when we see some positive things, we want to bring it to your attention because on occasion, you know, whether it's an accident or not, on occasion they might do the right thing, and we are pleased that Trump has canceled this, and we hope that is true, that they will not use the CIA to pass out weapons to our so-called friends. I want to thank everybody for tuning in today to the Liberty Report. Please come back soon.